Welcome to another deep dive. You wanted to get a closer look at Mark 1.40 through 2.1 season. And we're using a lecture by Dr. Mark Jennings as our guide. We're going to uncover how these stories reveal some key themes about Jesus' ministry, especially his authority and how he interacts with the concept of purity. These are more than just miracle stories. They're packed with theological and social dynamite.
Yeah, it's fascinating how Mark just dives right into these themes. We see Jesus engaging with people in situations that would have been incredibly challenging, even scandalous in that time and culture.
Yeah, let's start with the story of Jesus and the leper. It's easy to read over this quickly, but leprosy in biblical times wasn't just a physical ailment.
It absolutely wasn't. Leprosy meant social and ritual exclusion. Imagine being declared untouchable, cut off from everyone and everything you know. It was a living death.
Right.
And anyone who touched a leper risked becoming ritually impure themselves, further isolating the leper and anyone who dared to show them compassion.
So when the leper approaches Jesus, that's already a subversive act. He's breaking social norms, and his words, "If you are willing, you can make me clean," show us what Dr. Jennings calls muscular faith.
Right.
He has no doubt about Jesus's power. It's Jesus's willingness he's appealing to. What I find really interesting is if this muscular faith is a theme unique to Mark or something we see throughout the Gospels.
That's a great question. While muscular faith is a term coined by Dr. Jennings in reference to Mark, we can definitely see instances of bold, action-oriented faith in other Gospels as well. Think of the woman with the hemorrhage who pushes through the crowd to touch Jesus' garment in Luke, or the Canaanite woman who persistently challenges Jesus' initial reluctance to help her daughter in Matthew. There's a sense of urgency and determination in their actions, a willingness to break societal norms and expectations to reach Jesus.
And Jesus' response to the leper is equally subversive. It's not just the healing, it's the how. He touches the man before healing him.
That's a detail that's easy to miss. In that culture, the belief was that impurity was stronger than purity, that if something clean touched something unclean, the uncleanliness would dominate. But Jesus turns that on its head. It's his purity, his holiness that spreads. He's not afraid of being contaminated. Instead, he's the one who cleanses. It's an act of defiance against the prevailing ideas of ritual purity and a foreshadowing of Jesus' power to overcome all impurity.
And yet, even after this incredible act of compassion and power, Jesus tells the healed man to keep it quiet, go to the priest, and follow the proper procedures for reintegration into society.
This instruction to stay silent is a recurring theme in Mark, often referred to as the messianic secret. Some scholars suggest that it's meant to highlight the gradual unfolding of Jesus' identity, building suspense and anticipation for the ultimate revelation of his true nature. Others believe it's a way of emphasizing that Jesus' mission wasn't about seeking fame or popularity, but about the deeper work of transforming hearts and challenging the status quo.
Even positive actions can have unintended consequences, though. The healed man can't contain himself and spreads the news, forcing Jesus to avoid towns to escape the crowds. Now on to the healing of the paralytic in Capernaum, where Jesus' fame is clearly spreading because the place is packed.
Mark creates this vivid image, people crammed inside, even blocking the door. It's in this chaotic scene that we encounter another example of that muscular faith we were talking about.
Those four friends carrying their paralyzed friend decide to make a new entrance through the roof. That's dedication. But what really struck me is that Jesus deals with the man's sins before healing his paralysis.
That's a key moment. It shows Jesus' authority over the spiritual realm, the root cause of suffering. Sin, in this context, isn't just about breaking rules. It's about being separated from God, which can manifest in all sorts of ways, including physical ailments. Jesus goes straight to the heart of the problem, demonstrating his power to forgive and heal on a much deeper level.
The scribes, of course, are scandalized. "Who can forgive sins but God alone?" they grumble.
And it's right here that Mark subtly drops a bombshell. Jesus knew what they were thinking. This isn't just a miracle worker. This is someone with divine insight, the ability to perceive the thoughts of others, a clear indication of his unique authority.
The healing itself then becomes proof of the invisible reality of the forgiveness. It's a visible demonstration of Jesus's power to not just heal the body, but to address the spiritual condition of a person. Talk about a powerful statement.
Absolutely. And this theme of Jesus challenging the established religious order is something we'll see a lot more of as we continue to explore Mark. It raises important questions about who holds true authority, what it means to follow God faithfully, and how we interpret and apply religious teachings in our own lives.
So we've seen Jesus heal a leper, forgive sins, and heal a paralytic, all acts that challenge social and religious norms. What's next?
Well, things are about to get even more interesting as we move on to the call of Levi. This story really throws a wrench into the social and religious customs of the time, particularly around who is considered clean and who is considered unclean. So we meet Levi sitting at the tax collector's booth, which immediately raises eyebrows. Tax collectors were not just disliked, they were considered inherently sinful.
It wasn't just about the taxes, right?
Right.
They were seen as collaborators with the Roman oppressors, profiting from the very people they were supposed to serve. And to make matters worse, they were notorious for skimming off the top.
Exactly. So when Jesus simply says, follow me, it's a radical invitation. This isn't just adding another disciple. It's bringing someone whose very profession was considered morally corrupt into the fold.
And you have to wonder what the other disciples thought. Fishermen, like Simon and Andrew, probably had their fair share of run-ins with tax collectors. To see one suddenly become part of their group must have been jarring.
It definitely challenges our assumptions about how we form community and who we welcome into our inner circle. And it gets even more provocative when Levi throws a dinner party and invites his fellow tax collectors and other people considered sinners.
That phrase, tax collectors and sinners, seems deliberate. It's almost like Mark is emphasizing that Levi isn't an anomaly, that Jesus is intentionally associating with a whole class of people deemed unacceptable by the religious elite.
It's a powerful statement about who Jesus prioritizes and who he considers worthy of his attention. And remember, table fellowship was a big deal back then. It wasn't just about sharing food. It was about aligning yourself with certain people and values.
So Jesus eating with these sinners was a deliberate challenge to the social and religious hierarchies of the time. He's not just bending the rules, he's rewriting them.
And of course, the Pharisees are watching, ready to pounce. Why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners? They ask, hoping to discredit Jesus.
But Jesus' response is brilliant. It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. He's not denying their sinfulness. He's reframing it. He's the doctor, and these are the patients who need him most.
There's even a hint of irony in his words, right? The Pharisees, who prided themselves on their righteousness, are implicitly excluded from this call. Jesus is here for the outcasts, the marginalized, the ones deemed unclean and unworthy.
These stories raise so many questions about how we view ourselves and others. Who are the tax collectors and sinners in our own time and context? Are we willing to sit at the table with them, to see them as worthy of our compassion and love?
Those are questions worth wrestling with. And this tension between Jesus's radical inclusivity and the exclusiveness of the religious establishment is a thread that runs throughout Mark's gospel.
We see it again in how Jesus approaches the Sabbath laws. The Pharisees are obsessed with the letter of the law, the strict rules about what you can and can't do on the Sabbath. But Jesus seems more interested in the spirit of the law, the underlying principles of compassion, mercy, and human need.
Remember the story of the disciples picking grain on the Sabbath. The Pharisees are scandalized, accusing them of harvesting. But Jesus reminds them of the story of King David, who ate consecrated bread when he was hungry, even though it was technically against the rules. He's saying that human need sometimes trumps rigid adherence to the law.
It's like he's saying, you're so focused on the rules that you've lost sight of what really matters. And this comes to a head in the story of the man with the withered hand in the synagogue. The Pharisees are practically salivating, waiting to see if Jesus will break the Sabbath by healing him.
It's a classic trap. If Jesus heals, he breaks the law. If he doesn't, he appears heartless and uncaring. But Jesus turns the tables on them with a powerful question. Is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath? To save life or to kill?
Their silence is deafening. They're so caught up in their legalistic interpretations that they've lost sight of basic human decency. And then Jesus, filled with compassion, heals the man's hand right there in front of them.
It's a deliberate act of defiance, a powerful demonstration of his authority over the law and his unwavering commitment to compassion. And it infuriates the Pharisees. Mark tells us they start plotting with the Herodians to kill Jesus. Talk about a reaction.
So the conflict is escalating. We see these clashes over purity, Sabbath laws, and authority building towards a major showdown.
Exactly. And it all comes back to this central question. Who has the authority to define what is right, what is pure, what is truly pleasing to God? Is it the religious elite with their rigid rules and interpretations? Or is it Jesus who embodies a radical love and compassion that transcends those limitations?
We see that Jesus isn't just challenging interpretations of the law. He's teaching with a different kind of authority altogether.
The scribes were known for their tedious recitations of the law, and their reliance on tradition. They were essentially walking commentaries. But Jesus teaches with a freshness and a directness that cuts through the noise.
There's a story in Mark where Jesus casts out an unclean spirit, and the people are amazed. They say, "What is this? A new teaching?" And with authority, he even gives orders to unclean spirits, and they obey him.
It's not just what he says. It's how he says it. He speaks with the authority of someone who knows God intimately, not just as a distant rule giver. And this authority is deeply connected to his identity. Remember in the story of the paralytic when Jesus says, "But that you may know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins."
He's not just claiming to be a prophet or a teacher. He's hinting at something far greater. And all these actions, his healing power, his defiance of social and religious norms, his command over unclean spirits, all point towards that greater reality.
It's as if Mark is slowly peeling back the layers, revealing more and more of Jesus's true nature with each story. And this tension between Jesus's authority and the expectations of the religious leaders is only going to intensify as we move deeper into the gospel.
It feels like we're on the edge of something huge here.
We are. These early chapters of Mark aren't just isolated stories. They're laying the groundwork for the dramatic confrontation to come. Jesus isn't just healing people or offering insightful teachings. He's shaking the very foundations of the religious and social order.
So what can we take away from all of this? What does it mean for us reading these stories centuries later?
That's the question, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
For me, one of the biggest takeaways is that following Jesus isn't about blind obedience or sticking to the letter of the law.
Right.
It's about aligning ourselves with his radical love, his compassion, his willingness to challenge the status quo. Remember the leper and the paralytic's friends?
Yeah.
Their faith wasn't passive. It was active, even confrontational. They had to break social norms and risk rejection to reach Jesus.
It makes you wonder, what are the rooftops we need to break through today? What social or religious norms need to be challenged in order to truly live out our faith?
And think about the implications of those dinner parties with the tax collectors and sinners. It wasn't just about breaking bread. It was about breaking down barriers, welcoming those deemed unacceptable by society. It challenges us to ask, who are the marginalized in our own communities? Are we willing to extend that same radical hospitality to see them as worthy of our time and attention?
This deep dive has really challenged me to think differently about what it means to follow Jesus. It's not about staying comfortable or clinging to familiar rules. It's about embodying that same spirit of compassion, that same willingness to challenge injustice, even when it's uncomfortable.
And to remember that true purity isn't about avoiding certain people or following a set of external regulations. It's about aligning our hearts with God's heart, which is a heart of love, mercy, and radical inclusivity.
This has been an eye-opening deep dive. We've seen how Jesus confronted hypocrisy, redefined purity, and challenged the very notion of authority. These stories from Mark are full of action and intrigue, but they also offer profound lessons for us today. If Jesus were walking among us now, who would he be eating with? Whose company would make others uncomfortable? It's a question worth pondering. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you on our next deep dive.